Hello everyone and welcome to Blogging Theology. Today I am delighted to talk to Aisha Gray Henry. You are most welcome. Salaam alaikum.
Wa alaikum salaam.
Lovely to meet you, Paul. Lovely to see you. Welcome here. Aisha Gray Henry, also known as Sister Gray, is an American writer, Islamic scholar, filmmaker and editor, amongst other things. And you are director of Fons Vitae Books. I hope I pronounced that correctly, got the Latin right. A non-profit academic publishing house, which focuses on translating the great classical texts of Islamic spirituality. And she co-founded the Ghazali Children's Project with Sheikh Hamza Yusuf more than 10 years ago, I think. She has continuous teaching experience from 1996 right up to the present, having taught elementary school through to university courses, as well as adult education, and delivered various community lectures. She studied at Al-Azhar University in Cairo for 10 years and is a research fellow at Clare Hall at Cambridge University. And since 1979, you've made a significant contribution to publishing in the area of Islamic studies and comparative religion. And you're co-founder and trustee of the Islamic Text Society, based in Cambridge, also in the UK. So, Sister Gray, my first question to you is, and there's an awful lot to discuss, I know, is what is the Ghazali Children's Project? That's our main theme, I think, for today. What is that?
Well, this is a project that really is the culmination of what I'm, I suppose, supposed to be delivering as a human being. I got interested in Al-Ghazali in 1967 in New York City. I majored in world religions, and I happened to be reading Al-Ghazali's autobiography called The Deliverance from Error.
Oh, yes.
And I read it, and my hair stood on end, because here was someone, one of the greatest scholars of all times, saying, I'm on a crumbling bank, up, up, and away, if not now, when? And I've always been on that crumbling bank, and I'm always wondering when I will try to finally let go of the egoic life and be more present and act from my heart. And I read that and I thought, I really love him. And that interested me in Islam. And then ultimately, after we, my husband and I, drove from, well, we sailed from New York to Tangiers, drove to Cairo across the desert, had a daughter born in Libya in under the kingship of King Idris, Allah yirhamu. Then we had 10 years in Egypt meeting some of the greatest spiritual scholars imaginable. And we were there with a lot of other young people, Japanese, French, English. And then we thought, we have to give back. We've seen the beauty of the Islam and the manners and the quality in these wonderful people. And we did films all over the Muslim world. We visited the Muslims in Taipei and Japan and Indonesia, India, etc. So we moved to Cambridge in 1979-80.
That's not Cambridge, Massachusetts, but Cambridge in the
England,
UK.
England, here. And we opened up the Islamic Text Society with the aim of finding great scholars to translate the Islamic spiritual classics into beautiful English and produce them with the elegance they deserved. And this is how it all began. And of course, Ghazali was the first thing. And Abdul Hakim Winter had just graduated from Pembroke, and he translated Book 40. He started with the last, the Book of Death and what comes after, and later on Breaking the Two Desires. And so the Ghazali series got going in the early 80s, and here we are, like 40 some odd years later, but it's coming, it's incredible to have been drawn into this.
But what's also incredible is that you're obviously an American woman from Kentucky in the American South. I've been there. It's definitely definitely not like London. But you've made the extraordinary journey, haven't you, from that part of the world, which is not famous for its Islamic scholarship, to become one of the preeminent scholars, if
well,
you like.
Well, I'm contributing, not a scholar, but I'm a publisher.
You've published, the Islamic Text Society and so on. That's an incredible journey. How does a lady from the American South end up becoming such a prominent publisher of Islamic texts?
I think what it really is that each human being, we're all being drawn to who we really are. And if you are drawn to something and you love it and keep going with it, it's almost as though something's coming through you. One of the things I learned from Ghazali in the, oddly enough, the book of Zakat, when he says, Paul, Gray, did either of you give your, choose your parents, select where you'd be in time and space? Did we give ourselves our skills, our loves, our strengths, our connections? No. Mm. We actually, everything you and I are, is on loan. It's an amana, a trust from God. Mm. So actually, we can't take credit for what we do, because it's what we're doing. Mm. And you can just watch and see what you're doing, and then you can see what you were given to do. Mm. So in a way, I was just picked out. I think probably because I love Ghazali and have a skill in finding authors and scholars and publishing their works, that this project came on. And so I came back to Kentucky in 1990 so my mother and father could die in the home he built.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The new Hawaiian Bros Island Grill in Lubbock has all the vibes. Amazing island-inspired flavors, huge servings, super positive people, incredibly fast drive-thru, an awesome rewards program, and this huli huli chicken with extra teriyaki sauce that's about to become my lunch. Hawaiian Bros, it's a vibe. Look us up at hawaiianbros.com for dine-in, pickup, or delivery.
He was an architect. So I came back, and after Daddy and Mother died, I went to Tibet and got involved with Tibetan
Tibet.
Islam. Yes.
Wow.
Yes, I published the book. Prince Razi of Jordan and the Dalai Lama did a book for me, The Common Reality Between Buddhism and Islam. And I've spent a lot of time with the Dalai Lama, too. And then also I worked in the Bosnian War, and all of our books are also in Bosnian. And then I opened up at the suggestion of Abdul Hakim Murad Winter.
Now, he's also known as Tim Winter.
Yes.
As an academic at Cambridge University and head of the Cambridge Muslim College in
Cambridge. And he built the most beautiful mosque, modern mosque, Echo
Mosque.
Yeah,
it is stunning, isn't it, actually?
You gasp when you
go in.
It's so beautiful.
It is remarkable, yeah.
So he suggested I start something and call it Fons Vitae, Fountain of Life.
As typically, Tim Winter's very obscure Latin phrase.
Well, it's wonderful.
People not going to necessarily know him, but it means what? It means Fountain of Life. Or
Fountain of Life.
Fountain of Life.
And
yeah.
So the immediate thought, I'm in Kentucky teaching, got to continue the 40 books, and the Islamic Text Society continuing, and then me doing. And it was moving slowly along. And then one day, and I did start to try to read some of the books we had published, like The Book of Death. And honestly, it was so scholarly.
Mm.
Nothing wrong with that.
It's quite a big, fat black tome, isn't it?
Well,
and it's very dense and concentrated.
It's brilliant.
And,
but there, when you start reading it, I'm a slow reader. And it was so profound, and the language was so magnificent.
Mm.
And then there were so many so many supportive texts that Ghazali puts in from Quran and Hadith.
Yeah.
That, like, I would stop in each one. You can't just read it like a newspaper. You have to think about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, oh my goodness, I am never going to get to read the Ghazali because, and at this moment, Hamza Yusuf called me one morning. He said, my children go to an Islamic school and basically it's not working out. I know what he means because children end up being told, do this and that and do 10 of these. You might go to hell, you might go to heaven. And so it's not engaging. It's not something they love. And he said, why don't you do Ghazali for children? And, you know, as you said earlier, what a weird idea.
Well, this to many people, when I first heard of this concept, seems impossible because Ghazali, as you've already explained, is such an exalted, sophisticated intellect.
Written for scholars.
One of the great intellects of the human race, arguably. Mm-hmm. And here is the suggestion that he might be available, accessible for children, young children. So how is it? But clearly you've made the impossible possible.
And I want to say, it's not for children. The children's books are for us. Hmm. And honestly, with the children's series, they're good from age 5 to age 80. And it's because we're all, in a funny way, the same age. Hmm. The children we used to have during COVID, a group of us that would meet on Sundays. We had people in Dubai, people in Bosnia, people in London, people in New York. And we would get parents, grandparents, and children, and we would take one point and discuss it. And the children actually like to hear some older person saying, I'm having a problem with anger. So it's not like we're little children. Yeah, we're grown-ups. Yeah, yeah. And you started realizing that the children themselves are actually brilliant, you know? Mm. And to the point that my little granddaughter, who lives in Germany, the book I'm working on right now that's about to go to press, and I'm going to be doing a children's presentation at the Cambridge Mosque on Sunday, but also here at this center, a school nearby here. It's book 23. It's called The Banes of the Tongue, The Things You Can't Say. The tongue is the most delicate little organ, and Ghazali says it can do more harm than a sledgehammer, and its reach is vast. Mm. And there are 20 things that we are doing, which are not only harming others, but they're destroying our fitra, our own essence. Mm. And when I read that book, my hair stood on end. Mm. Well, as we all know in Islam, backbiting is one of the worst things you can do. Mm. The image is you're eating
the flesh.
It's the worst
it's
image
disgusting.
You know.
It's meant to be disgusting. It's repulsive, and that's the whole point. We're not supposed to do it.
It's that bad.
It's that bad.
And it breaks your fast as well.
Does it?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
There's when we were doing the book on fasting, it was amazing. There was a hadith in which the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, an old lady or two of them came and said, you know, we're old and we're tired. May we break our fast early today? And he gave them a bowl and he said, throw up in this. And to the horror of the onlookers, pieces of flesh and blood went into the pot. He said, you already broke your fast because you were gossiping.
Gosh.
And that's a sahih hadith. So even fasting is broken because there's an inner fast and there's an outer fast, of course.
Yeah.
And so then what happened with my granddaughter, who's now 12, but when she, 10, 11, whatever she is. So I called her last year and I said, you won't believe this, but Imam al-Ghazali points out that there's the gossiping you do out loud, but we are always talking to ourselves because we have an inner conversation, right? And so he said, when we are talking to ourselves, making judgment, oh, isn't he horrible? Oh, yuck. He said, all the inner conversation is mostly based on assumption without facts. And we are gossiping in front of our true selves. And you know what my granddaughter said, the 10-year-old? She said, Granny, she said, we do it all the time. She said, do you know, when I look out the window and I see homeless, I've thought, yuck. And she said, but I didn't know their circumstances. Mm. And she said, there's a boy in my school who's spoiled and I've really hated him. Now I realize I don't understand what brought him to this. This is a 10-year-old. Of course, she started Ghazali when she was 5 years old. And what the project does, now that you ask what the project is, it reframes, it gives children and us a new lens through which to see everything. Because, of course, we are given the principles in Islam of all the things we should understand and know, and how to do wudu and prayers and the whole. But what Ghazali does is he goes inside and opens up the inner transformative meaning of each thing. It's not like, he says, for example, prayer. You know, often your mind wanders, you're not concentrated. So he points out that if you, Paul, had issues or problems in your life, could you go to the head of the BBC or a prime minister here and they would have time to listen to you? No, but God is always waiting and wanting to hear from you. And he said, when you begin a prayer, you start with the takbir. He said, at that moment, and you can try this yourself, bring yourself into remembering, I am standing before Al-Malik. Whoa, get into that position. And he said, if you say things like subhanAllah, don't just say subhanAllah, get into the mode of being of awe, right? If you are saying, ihdina sirata, right? Be contrite, don't just ramble through your prayers. Not that it's not perfect to do your, but he said, if you can actually change your mode of being, ayah to ayah, and be present. And if you try this, of course, it slows down the prayer amazingly, but you're in a space that kind of opens into infinity. So he shows you how, by going into everything you're doing, he opens out the inner meaning.
That's one thing that struck me some time ago when I was a Christian, actually, before I embraced Islam, alhamdulillah, was having been schooled in the teaching of Jesus in the Gospels, like in the Sermon on the Mount, for example, or the parables. And this great emphasis on the interior, the intention, the sincerity, the loving your neighbor, not just merely going through external practices and rituals and commandments, which the Gospels accuse the Pharisees of doing. And then when I heard this, not just Al-Ghazali, but in the Hadith, of course, in the Quran, I thought, yeah, I recognize this. This is authentic spirituality. This is the real thing. And that made my transition to Islam very smooth, because the connection between Jesus and Muhammad, peace be upon them both, is very real and profound. And so I didn't have to kind of contrive a bridge, a way to Islam. It was just recognizing the similarity at a deep level, the spiritual commonalities between them. And so Al-Ghazali, as you are wonderfully articulating him, expresses this sentiment, a very Jesus-like sentiment about loving from the heart. The famous antitheses of the Sermon on the Mount, don't just not commit adultery, but don't commit adultery from your heart. Don't just not kill people, but don't get angry with them, and so on and so on. And this is the same thing, and that's why we know that all these prophets are sent by God, because they essentially have the same message, I think.
But they're not two truths, are there?
No.
You know, truth may end up being clothed in different traditions or different forms, but finally mercy is mercy.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
I mean.
Yeah. But it takes those who have, eyes to see and ears to hear to actually notice that. A lot of people are distracted by, obviously the media representations about Islam or religion in general, and don't really get to the heart of the matter at all. And that's a great shame.
It's a great shame.
It's a great shame. But those who actually see and hear at a deeper level recognize these things, obviously like yourself, and who've been graced by God to see this, and then build this extraordinary work that you've been doing. But you have some books, by the way, of...
Well,
the,
I mean, we did, the life of Imam Al-Ghazali, because we thought people wouldn't really know it.
Yes.
And we do, our books are really beautiful. And this is by Demi, one of the greatest artists. And what we did was we put the text for the parents here.
Right.
And then we put in below the illustrations the text for the children.
So that's the children's text.
Yes.
And this is the adult's text either side. That's very clever,
this
actually.
Is where Ghazali makes the decision up and away.
Right.
Yeah. So this is one of the things we did. But then we did... the first book is called The Book of Knowledge, and if I can get the workbook here, let me find it. Oh, there it is. The Book of Knowledge is said, this is the first of the 40 books, and Hamza Yusuf said of the Ihya ul-Mubin, it's the Quran in a usable order. Ghazali, you could diagram. It starts out, it says this, and from that comes this, and it builds up. And it's so clear, right? So the Book of Knowledge starts with, well, I'll just say, and this is why it's so effective for children. All right, I'm just going to tell you something. He begins the Book of Knowledge, and I'm going to say it in the children's way to you.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
Did you know, Paul, that there are two kinds of learning?
Okay. No, I didn't. All right. What are they?
Well, one is regular practical learning.
Right. You know,
but the other is how to polish your heart. And then you could say, what?
Yes.
So my little granddaughter, Layla, said, what? I said, didn't you know there are two hearts? There's the physical heart that pumps the blood, but then there's the real heart, the spiritual heart. And she said to me, well, how does it get dirty? Oh, you know, maybe you don't mind mommy. Maybe you don't share. But why would you have to polish that off? Oh, you didn't know there are two realms. There's this world, this is brief. And then there's the eternal realm, which is forever.
The unseen. Yeah.
And so what happens is, you start talking to the children, and I mean, even in the workbook for the book, well, this is the book, the Book of Knowledge, right. And we've made them all perfectly beautiful.
They are stunning, I must say.
They're stunning.
The quality is extraordinary,
I had a grant from the Templeton Foundation for just under $1 million, and it took 3 years solid getting the illustrators, and how do you get this material from a Ghazali adult book. We would have a scholar, in the case of the Book of Knowledge, Abdulhadi Honorkamp, translated it from the Arabic into English, and then that went into several years of editing to make it perfect for publication for adults.
Right.
And then I took that manuscript and circled every key idea and picked one or two supportive scriptural passages, not all of them. And what I found was I wasn't about to knowing that there'll be people who will never read anything except the children's books. So this is Ghazali.
But you've got a master's in curricular development?
Master's in education and curriculum development.
So you're precisely qualified at a master's level to actually do this?
Yes.
And also,
I've taught from 12 euros through university, so I'm used to trying to get a point across to a lot of bored people. So anyway, so what was I talking about here?
So I interrupted.
No, that's all right.
You were talking about, obviously creating a Ghazali for children from this bigger
text.
So
then after that, we had to have a storyline, because, you know, people remember stories. I can tell you, be patient, but if I tell you the story of Sayyidina Ayyub, of Job, you can remember it. It's amazing. So I had to have a storyline for all of this.
Yeah, this is what Jesus did with the parables, of course. He didn't just tell people to love your neighbor. He told these extraordinary stories of the Good Samaritan and so on, which we're still talking about 2,000 years later. So
It's amazing what stories will do for all of us, because you can go back to that. And so with the Book of Knowledge, there's a storyline.
Yeah.
There are a group of children who are, you know, coming home from school in some Islamic town. I mean, they're talking about, you know, mother is really angry, I'm missing prayers, you know, I'm late, and I don't know why we have to do all of this, right? And then they find a forgotten garden, this, you know, what little door with ivy, and they go in and it's beautiful. It's a forgotten place in their town. And they think, we could meet here and talk about our questions. And then they think, well, who will answer our questions? You know, there's that old man who sits in the Medan every day, and the birds are on him and the squirrels, you know, because he's no ego, so nothing's afraid of him. So they go over to old Hajj Abdullah, and they say, will you, sir, kind sir, come to our garden, you know, a few days after school and answer questions? And he says, I will do this, but I won't answer for myself. I'll answer from Imam al-Ghazali. Oh. And it starts like this, but then the children get answers from their grandparents. Their grandmother teaches them about the jihad al-nafs, the different levels of the soul. I mean, children can understand, they don't have to be not informed about the nafs al-amara, the nafs al-awama. Why not tell them?
Because there's a sense that, I mean, Islamically understood, children are closer, they're fresher, they're more innocent, because they've come more recently from God, haven't they? Well, whereas those of us who are a lot older have been around
the dunya, veiled.
But they are fresher, more innocent, and more open to these unseen truths than perhaps people who are much older are. So,
that's true.
Yeah.
So the idea was to create this and go through we went through the Book of Knowledge, the Book of Belief, the Creed. Then, I mean, if you had a child that said to you, Dad, who and what and where is God? Could you as a parent answer that? No. Mm-hmm. But Ghazali does it so simply that even the children's Book of Belief is used to teach by some imams. It's actually used to teach adults because it gets right to the point. And it's also in Arabic at Azhar. This is the children's version, you know, because it is clear. And so with the heart, I'll just show you that we also did, besides the books, we've done, you have to do a workbook, and there has to be a teacher's curriculum for each book, for every chapter. But with the heart, you see, the children see the two kinds of hearts. You see, there's the physical heart.
That's the pump, and that's the spiritual heart.
So that, and so one of the, and they're different ways. Which heart do you nourish? You nourish this heart this way and this way. But what is so interesting that at the beginning of the Book of Knowledge, when Imam al-Ghazali says the whole point is the polishing of the heart, right? Then it's pointed out, in your life, you're going to have problems every day. All you have to do is think and you suffer, right? Every moment is an opportunity to polish your heart. And so the technique we use in the Ghazali series is the children draw their own golden heart. Some of them have made it out of Velcro and then they put dots on things they have to work on, right? So they're in charge of themselves. They're not being told, did you do it? The point is not to police our children, but make them aware of what the whole process is and the pleasure of taking it on themselves. And so it's like if I have lots of things to do, like I have 20 books underway, I'm feeling uncomfortable because I don't know, I forget what I've got to be doing. So I have a yellow legal pad on the kitchen counter at home, and I check off things, but I can see it all. So they have their heart, and they know what they're working on. Yeah. And then they also do videos, because it's one thing to say to your children, I want you to share, right? When a mother says to the children, share, they feel if mother is saying it, it's got to be a bad thing, right? But what they haven't experienced is what it actually is. So we have the children, let's say, make a little homemade video of not sharing. No, Paul, you can't have my, you can't hold my truck. No, Gray, you can't have one of my cookies. And it's fun and they laugh. Oh, you can't. Then you say, play act, sharing. Would you like to hold my truck? And I'm not, well, that felt good. It was easy to do, right? And I didn't lose anything by it. So children have to experience play acting these things, and they think, I get it. But instead, we're just lecturing them. Like with this book on the banes of the tongue, you know, we're told in Islam, you cannot argue. It's forbidden to argue. Think how many children argue with their parents. No, I'm not going to go to bed, you know. But what Ghazali points out, he unpacks arguing. What am I doing if I'm arguing with you? I'm saying, Paul, you're wrong and I am right, right? You know, and you're ignorant of what the truth is here. Well, what has been activated is my nafs.
Oh, yes.
It's trying to overpower you. It's not the heart.
And we see this at Speaker's Corner here in London, by the way. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's an appalling place, which I go to all the time. And exactly that. You get these arguments, debates, and so on. And one thing always happens, exactly what you describe, is the rise of the ego.
You can feel it.
And you get the competitiveness and the aggression can come out, particularly if it's testosterone fueled as well. And that's why it can become very toxic quite quickly. So one always tries to look for discussions or even debates where the ego isn't dominating like that, where people are actually interested to listen to the other person and learn even.
Well, it's a conversation.
Exactly. But that usually doesn't happen like that. And you get the nafs, the ego, and it can, particularly with younger guys, it can get quite ugly, actually. And it's a disaster. When they think they're doing dawah, they're not really doing dawah, they're displaying their ego and desire for conquest and domination. This is the thing. I will dominate you, you Christian, you atheist, whatever. And of course, that's you can win the argument, but lose the person. The person can be put off by this arrogance and
well, this
so
is
on.
One of the other banes of the tongue. You think you're telling someone something, but it's subtle boasting. It's one-upmanship.
Yes.
You know, you think I'm telling you about a wonderful thing I just did, but in it is it's really bragging, you know. And that's, all of those things are strengthening the ego. And I've discovered with the children's program that we've been doing together for so long, that finally all of the things that we're asked to do, the sunnah, is to put the other person first. And that's not what you're doing when you're arguing or boasting. It's always me first. And Ghazali says quite an interesting thing. He said, this is when we're speaking, and all the harm, it comes from speech. He said, silence, if you can be silent, that's where you're secure. Abu Bakr Sarajid, Abu Bakr Sadiq kept pebbles in his mouth. So he had to take them out in order. So he considered, is this worth saying? Is it a good thing? Because we shouldn't say anything that's not beautiful. We've been given speech as this incredible miracle for scripture, for saying beautiful things. And look how speech is used. Even, I mean, so Ghazali says that when you're about to speak, this is, you're talking about the heart and Sayyidina Isa alayhi salam. When you're about to speak, you should pause and let the heart consider what it's about to say. But my granddaughter drew this. He says, but mostly the tongue is out in front of the heart. So that's a slip of the tongue. And once you've said something that's hurt someone, it's like toothpaste. You can never get it back in, right? It's gone. So he said, so the heart considers what it's about to say. And then you realize what's going on. If we're speaking from the heart, our heart has it has no ego. It's pure presence. It's pure goodness. And we have like a tube around of us, our packaging. You're from London and you this and that. I'm from Kentucky. I'm do this. I don't like broccoli. I've got this whole packaging, this narrative, which my egoic lower nafs. And it's a veil. And whenever I'm doing things through it, look what you're doing. You're misunderstanding. You're judging other people through your packaging. So the whole point of acting from the heart is what the Ihya Ulumuddin is about.
You know, it's also listening to the heart as well, isn't it? It's not acting from, but listening to
That's right.
But being in tune with one's, that organ, that spiritual organ.
No, the whole Ghazali project is the polishing of the heart. It's really interesting. And so the books, you know, go right on through. We have the Book of Belief, which is the Akida, what we actually believe. And then here is the Book of Purification, you know, and I use for the end papers, like water, these tiles from Morocco. And I mean, the story of what you should really be doing in wudu, you know, it's extraordinary. And the one little boy told me, you know, I got my wudu down to about 30 seconds. He said I could get it done. Whereas what you're supposed to do is, as you're washing your hands, which symbolizes action, dear God, forgive me what I've just been doing. May what I do now please you. The mouth, forgive me what, may what I say, may what I listen to, may my feet take you to where it pleases you. Do you see what I mean? Even the children in the story notice, oh my goodness, we are actually five times a day given a time to like really observe and ask forgiveness and renew and purify. So what you do is you get little children, I mean, my grandchild, I would look and she just goes like this, polish the heart. They know exactly what they're doing. And one day I videoed my grandson putting dots on his heart lying on the floor, and he said, here's for not minding mummy, here's for making all the noise in the house. They know exactly what they're doing. But what you're doing, instead of criticizing them and putting them down, you're putting them in charge. And this is but in the process, what you're getting into is, it's really a project for parents. The parents, if they're not doing it with the children, then they won't be the right role model. You know, one day a mother called me and she said, my little daughter, Lena, she came up to me. I had a ladies' party and she said, Mom, are you backbiting? And I said, may I speak to Lena? This little girl got on the phone and she said, Granny, she calls me Granny. She said, before I did the Ghazali chapter on backbiting, I didn't know about it. And I thought, didn't even know about it. Because our mothers always told us, if you don't have something good to say about someone, don't say anything at all. But this has to really be, otherwise it's just more and more teachings and platitudes that are not totally understood.
Oh, extraordinary. And the last volume?
Well, Well, the Book of Charity and Fasting is amazing, but and I spoke a little bit about the fasting. I mean, charity. Oh my goodness gracious. This is unbelievable. You know how I explained that everything we have is on trust, it's on loan to us. He says, he tells the story. Ghazali has incredible stories within stories. And then you're reading Rumi and other people later and you realize everybody's been grabbing Al-Ghazali's stories. In the story, there's a rich man who has lands. Mm. And the king, God, goes to him and says, you know, there's a poor family in the town. Take them food, right? He said, oh, you know, these are my lands. They should work for a living. All right, I'll take the food. So he goes, and you should see the illustration. And he holds up the tray of food. So they're reaching up. They're feeling begging. They're feeling low. They're made to feel low. And also they're wondering, oh, my God, are we now beholden to him? Next time he's in town, will we have to take care of the horse? So then that's not the way to give, right? Mm-hmm. Then the king goes to a young man who is an orphan who's been adopted by people who've taught him finance and money. And he says, there's a poor widow. She needs money for her children to educate them. So he takes a tray of gold and holds it low. And he looks up into her face and says, oh, blessed lady, I beg you to receive what I bring on behalf of the king in order that I may fulfill some of my returning. So what you're supposed to do, if you give to a homeless out in the street, thank them. You thank them for giving you the opportunity to return all that has been given to you on loan. Wow. That's a whole other way to understand charity, isn't it? Yeah. It's not that, oh my gosh, so now her kids can go to school. No, that's fine. But that's not what's going on. Mm-hmm. It's you're actually finding the opportunity. Mm. And you have to thank those you give to. I mean, this stuff is unbelievable. On the Hajj book, I had made two Hajjs and many, many, many Umrahs. And when I did the book on Hajj, as I was reading Ghazali explain, not just going around saying things, standing here, postures, saying, all of that is good, but we don't understand what we're doing. And he points out that to start with, when you're leaving in a vehicle to go to Mecca, you may have been on a camel or a cart, and today a van. When you're on the way to the Kaaba, he said, consider the vehicle that's taking you there, like that piece of wood, the bier, on which your dead body is being taken to the grave. In other words, you are dead to this world, and you're returning to your Lord. That's what you're really doing. Mm-hmm. Then you get there, and of course, there's the tawaf. And Ghazali said, Sayyidina Omar, alayhi salam, said, I wouldn't kiss the black stone, except that I saw the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, kiss it. Ghazali said, well, that's not it. This is what's really going on with the black stone. When Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala spoke to Adam, and in Adam's loins were you and me, everyone who's ever been born, and everyone who will ever come into being till the end of time, all were there, and Allah says, am I not your Lord? And Adam, on our behalf, and we said, bala, nam, yes, right? So God says, I say this, lest on the day of reckoning, you plead ignorance of this relationship.
Yeah.
Ghazali said, that act, that contract that you and I made, that is inside of the black stone. That's what's there. And you, before you start the first tawaf, you attest to, you reaffirm that. And then every time you go around, you say, Bismillah, Allahu Akbar. Oh. Who would have known that? But Ghazali, once he undoes every single thing that's happening as you're making tawaf, it's like people are missing what they're doing. They're missing the understanding, the joy. It is so beautiful to be brought into actually understanding what we're doing. I think that's what's so great about Al-Ghazali. And he's so much for our time. You know, at this moment where our children are all just doing everything on iPhones, they can hardly read or write anymore. For them to have something that brings their faith to them in some way that it's, all right, it's fun. the workbook, the games, the activities that are in the school curriculum. So we're making it enjoyable rather than a pain. Mm. And this series has gone into, I don't know how many languages, it's going into Uzbek, Kazakh, Russian. Of course, it's already in French, Spanish, Finnish, Dutch, Urdu. It's going into Urdu, the Arabic one. There's several books done. It's caught on all over the world.
So how can people obtain these precious books?
Well, they can always go on the fonsvitae.com website.
Okay.
They're in England, there are bookstores here, like the Who bookstore carries them here.
Right.
And
so you can order them online, obviously, and through some bookshops. But you're here in the UK. Obviously, you're from Kentucky, as we know.
Yeah.
So what are you doing here? What's your mission in England with these books?
Well, besides seeing my family, all my children are here.
Oh, really?
My children have never lived in America. They're Americans who've never done America. They're lucky. They're lucky. All right. So I'm here with my daughter and son-in-law who live in Oxford with their two girls. Oh. And then my son lives in Germany with his two children.
Right.
And so what I'm doing here besides seeing them is there's an event here at the Al-Manar Islamic Center.
Which is where we are at the moment.
Where we are now in this
London.
Library.
Beautiful
and
library.
On Friday, they're bringing together various important personages involved with Islamic education and school teachers and parents who want to hear from me and also to better understand it, but also present, forget me, what's an American from Kentucky doing, telling these wonderful people how to educate their children. But we have coming from Salihal, Dr. Adiba Ahmed, who's founded a school called Hub Club, which is wonderful. And it's a full Ghazali. You can come in at any age, 5 years old, 11, 18, and they teach all the levels. And she has created something called Radiant Hearts during COVID, where people can take these courses online if you're in Bangladesh, right? Mm. I mean, we have schools, the Meme School in rural Pakistan, we have schools all over the place. And there, the South Africa did a Ghazali festival, and my son Mustafa and I went to four cities. We did 26 presentations. But then, also present will be a wonderful Lubna Al-Hok from Dubai. She's coming in for this. And she's coming in because she is one of the greatest teachers. She's taken children from little all the way till they're 18, and she's seen how they're different, how they're transformed. Because they can see, they understand, you know, and they're not fooled by the nafs. Because I'm just going to show you something in the workbook, which will fascinate you. You know, I didn't learn this stuff about all of this stuff until I grew up. I mean, we even have, look, comic strips, you know, for the children, which is wonderful, and Ghazali's life in cartoons. But then there's the question of putting children in charge. All right, here, you see, we have the three levels of nafs, you see? And here's an illustration. The girl is lying in bed. Her mother is trying to get her up for school. And her lower self says, I'm going to pretend that I'm asleep.
Yeah.
Then her blaming self says, you know, really, you should listen to mom and get up. And then there's the mutama'inna watching the conversation, because we always have the real self. It's like the conscience watching, like, what are you doing? Why don't you do the right thing? So this deep concept that you and I both learned about, right, is presented right away to little kids. Why shouldn't you give them the tools they need?
Wow. Well, maybe this might be a good place to conclude. There's so much more it could be said. You have an ocean of knowledge and experience and a lifetime's events that you could tell us about, but maybe another day, inshallah. But thank you so much, Sister Gray, for coming all the way from Kentucky. And I hope you have a blessed time in the UK.
Thank you
very much. I'm sure many people will be utterly amazed at what you've done and will look to take this treasure and utilize it.
I didn't do it. Are you aware that it just got sent through me?
Okay.
I didn't write these. I don't even put my name on it. It just came through. There's no sense of having done it. And you need to read the children's books.
It saved me. Looking forward to it.
It was what I needed. Actually, this was a gift from God for me, because God knew I needed to understand my dean in this level.
It's interesting, I mean, slightly changing the subject, but composers like Mozart and others have said, when they were praised for composing great symphonies and works of art, I didn't do it, it came through them. It was a gift from God for them, so that they actually disavowed ownership of this extraordinary music. So I just saw that parallel between great music and what you're doing in the sense of the origins of it.
This just used me to come on
interesting,
through.
Interesting. Okay. Oh, yeah. Thank you very much.
Barak Allah.
Fantastic. Salaam alaikum to you.
Wa alaikum salaam.